Because
do you want to win or do you want to?
Because then if they, because then.
Can you wait till Peter?
Is
Peter
going to check?
Okay. Teachers, can you support Don Bentel?
Above him at 46. Or no, 50.4 plus. Yeah, it'd be 53.
Told me they were up.
Maybe this is the.
What's it doing? What's it doing?
7.5.
Okay, if we can begin. We have a couple bills on the agenda today. We have Senator Foley's Judiciary Finance Bill, and then we've got Senator Langseth's Capital Investment Bill. So, Senator Foley, Senate File 1972.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You do have Senate File 1972 in front of you. This is the Judiciary Budget Division's omnibus bill, and included in our bill is the budget for the Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, the District Courts, Tax Court, Judicial Standards Board, and Board of Public Defense, and the Uniform Law Commission. And today I'm fortunate to have Ken Backus and Ken and Chris services. Turner to take us through this bill. And so here I am. I guess the appropriate thing is somebody has a A7.
I'd move that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, before we adopt this amendment, is this the one that cuts legal services from the division level?
Yeah. Senator Pappas.
Yeah.
Senator Foley and I have been involved with this for the last several days. Maybe I could indicate before the amendment's adopted, because it's a fairly significant amendment. There was a mistake made in preparation of the budget, which was nobody's fault as such, but members might recall that the last piece of the state takeover was 2 years ago, and this has been an ongoing process since 1989 when we first began that. And the last piece of the trial court takeover was, again, 2 years ago. So in the conversion for the state employee compensation, what was not taken into account was that last piece of the state takeover. And so a significant number of employees were missed with the 3.25% increase. That was $4.6 million. In addition, Senator Foley has worked hard on this and has a number of things that he'd like to talk to us about in terms of some of the line items and some of the programs that he would like to accomplish. But in the process, there were some other problems. So what we did, what I suggested doing, and members will recall, in Senator Betzold's bill, I offered an amendment to provide some additional revenue. And I indicated at that time that there were problems in a couple of the bills. There was a problem in Senator Murphy's bill, albeit a much smaller one. But we knew his bill, when we adjusted all the numbers, we knew we were about, Senator Murphy, what, about $250,000 out of balance with the compensation increases. So that was relatively small, but there was a significant problem with this bill. There have been a couple of other smaller things as well. And so that was one of the that was the main purpose behind the amendment to Senator Betzold's bill, which we passed off the floor on Saturday. And so what I've suggested is to increase the target for this bill by $8.5 million. And you know, one of the things we have to remember is that Senator Foley's budget division is highly personnel driven. I mean, there are not grants, there are not, you know, programs as such. It's basically people. You've got Senator Foley will talk to us about this, but you've got the courts, you know, public defender system, civil legal services, the tax court, board of judicial standards. It's basically people. So if you make mistakes, this was not Senator Foley's mistake at all, but if you make mistakes, then you end up with some problems. We're going to have significant layoffs. So, right, so I suggested we'd increase the target by $8.5 million. We had the revenue to do so, and then try to approximate So the proposed amendment takes a very small amount from civil legal services, a slightly larger amount from the Board of Public Defense, which is a larger budget, of course. And it allows Senator Foley can indicate of the principal case management request of the Board of Public Defense, I think they end up with this amendment, something like 78.5% of the proposed request. Civil legal services of the $4 million request ends up at a lesser percentage.
2.5.
Pardon?
So what, Mr. Chairman, what you did is you decreased the increase for legal services.
And for the Board of Public Defense. That's what's proposed in this amendment.
And that was in order to meet the other personnel needs of the courts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it keeps of the principal request of the Board of Public Defense that on their regular budget, it keeps that figure at about 78.5, the court figure at about 70%, civil legal service a little bit less. And obviously in a better year with more money, we wouldn't be doing this. I know I've been the person who's authored, not this year, but in past years, most of the requests for civil legal services. And I just as soon give them an additional $10 million. Although last year, I think we did, 2 years ago, we did give civil legal services, I think, a pretty large increase over the been their base amount. So the effort was to try to make some changes like that, to try to meet some of the concerns expressed by the courts. Nobody's entirely happy, and increase the target for the division. So that's what's encompassed in the A7 amendments. So I thought, Senator Foley, obviously you've worked with this. This has been a combination effort, but I thought I'd offer the explanation because certainly the 4.6 mistake that kind of started this snowballing had nothing to do with Senator Foley, fiscal staff, any of us. It was just, it was a particular mistake, and I think the state takeover of the trial court system has worked well. As the person who authored the original legislation, I think it's worked well in the courts throughout the state. It's only made a difference in the greater Minnesota courts, but we didn't quite catch up to that. So that's what's encompassed. So I think it was Senator Murphy offered the A7 amendment. I've offered the explanation. Senator Foley, anything else you wish to add?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So if you'd like that offered now, then we can go through the bill. Senator Murphy moves the A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what I will do is have Mr. Turner lay out what the bill actually says and does. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, in your packets you have two spreadsheets. One is dated in the lower right-hand quarter, 3/14/2007. That's the bill as it came out of division. We have a second spreadsheet, which is, and that is now obsolete. Second spreadsheet reflects the amendment, and it says so up in the upper right-hand corner. It's dated 3/24/2007. And real quickly, as Chairman Cohen said, the amendment raised our target by $8.5 million, and it reallocated an additional $2 million. The reallocations came $500,000 from civil legal and $1.5 million from the public defender. And the way it was reallocated, where the new money was salted, was that there was 4.6 needed for the 3.25 shortfall, and that shortfall came about because almost a quarter of the court employees are paid by the state, but it's funneled through the county payroll systems. So they're not reflected in the general fund salary base. Then we've got new money for the Supreme Court at $504,000 and new money for the trial courts at $5,353,000. That's where the $10.5 million went, and that will now be reflected in the amendment or in the spreadsheet here. So if we want to start page one, line 8, we have a total Supreme Court operations number of $62.9 million. Of the new initiatives under the Supreme Court, you have the 3.25% salary increase at $1.8 million, And then you have what we're calling maintain core justice services, which is the new money to the Supreme Court at $1.4 million. We go down to civil legal services. The base is at $12,320,000. Originally, the original bill proposed to increase that by $3 million for the biennium. This bill increases it by, after the amendment, by $2.5 million for the biennium. So a total of civil legal services of $27.1 million. And because civil is civil legal is funded through the Supreme Court, then you have a total Supreme Court appropriation, which includes Supreme Court operations and civil legal, at $90 million. If we move down to the Court of Appeals, we have, once again, the 3.25% compensation adjustment, $704,000. The chairman proposes a new three-judge appeals panel, as well as money for caseload increases, which would include staff members, clerks, a new staff attorney. That's totals for the biennium at $3,161,000. So we have a total for the Court of Appeals of roughly $20.2 million. Move on to the district courts. Here, the chairman is fairly prescriptive. There's four state-mandated services that the chairman fully funded. Guardian ad litems at $2,889,000. Interpreter services at $1,383,000. Psychological services for the court at $3,682,000. And Informa Pauperis services at $356,000. Then the courts requested nine new judges. Chairman Foley proposes seven new judges. At present, they are in the following districts. And there's a district map in your packet if you'd like to see where the judges are being proposed. But there's one in the first district. One in the third, one in the seventh, two in the ninth, and two in the tenth. That's how the bill stands right now. Then the chairman proposes $3,896,000 to maintain the current drug courts in the state. I think there's 21 of them. There's $1,297,000 increase for new drug or problem-solving courts. Is, I guess, what they're being called now, mental health courts, drug courts. Then a virtual self-help center for pro se litigants at $622,000. And then once again, here's the new money that was created by the amendment to the courts to maintain core justice services at $4,458,000. And then you've got the compensation adjustment, 3.25. We kept that line separate because we want to maintain the integrity of the Senate proposal of 3.25 for all state employees, and so we didn't just meld the maintain core services, the new money, into that line. We kept it separate. We're on page two. We have three small agencies. We have the tax court. The chairman proposes $111,000 to maintain existing functions for the tax court and $61,000 for the 3.25 compensation adjustment for a total tax court appropriation of $1,624,000. Uniform Laws Commission is essentially dues, $20,000 for increased dues, $110,000 total appropriation. For the Board of Judicial Standards, besides the base, we have a restoration of the base, which apparently they took a hit that they've been having difficulty with since, I believe, 93. Investigative and cost hearings, and hearing cost, sets up a revolving account within the Board of Judicial Standards at $125,000 per year, total of $250,000, and this money does not cancel. Then you have $21,000 in compensation adjustment and a total appropriation of $912,000. Then we get to the other big agency in the budget, the Public Defense Board. So start with the compensation adjustment of the 3.25, and that totals $4,384,000. Then the public defender appellate operation, the chairman proposes fully funding that request, that public defender request, at $1,160,000. Then we have what was in the request was one line with a lot of explanation. It was called public defender viability. The chairman broke that out into $5,687,000 for a public defender shortfall. This has been building through the years. They've been shorted on bases. They've been shorted on certain increases, and we hope that this is the last time we hear about it, but we fully funded the request. Then we have public defender caseload increases of $6,675,000, part-time public defender data entry at $1,053,000, and public defense corporations at $399,000. So we have a total public defense appropriation of $143 million. Then what we have down in revenue adjustments, Section 11 of the bill restores an unintentional statutory repealer made in the 2006 crime bill. It credits abandoned bail to the county law libraries in the municipalities of Hennepin County. And that's a general fund revenue offset of $240,000 a year. So then that brings us down to our target of $762,374,000. A couple of quick comparisons. The courts, the governor requested $46.2 million. In new money to the courts. This bill has $50.5 million in new money to the courts, and that does not include civil legal services, which is basically just a pass-through. For the public defender, the governor requested $7.5 million in new money. The Senate gave them $19.5 million, so we're $12 million over the governor. Public defender and approximately $4.2 million in the courts. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Foley?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, I have a...
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. I don't know if it's better to answer it now, or ask it now or when we're on the language, but Mr. Turner, you said there are seven new judges, and I believe they had requested nine. Which two did you not fill? Which two districts?
The request was two in the first. We gave them one. So that's one that we didn't fund was in the first district. And they requested three in the 10th, and we gave them two. So we didn't fund one in the first, and we didn't fund one in the 10th.
Chairman. Sir,
Chairman, on that issue, did we just run out of money or not?
I'm somewhat familiar with the first, and I know a little bit about their caseload. And
we ran out of medicines, I think, was the problem.
Yeah. I know the recommendation is for two, and I'm surprised that we couldn't do the two in the first. I don't know about the 10th. I don't live up there or hang around there, but I do know about the first. Let's find a little more money, Senator Foley. Get two in the first. I guess that's more of a comment. I do know a little bit, you know, that they need the two. But
Mr. Chairman and Senator Metzen, that probably is true in all of the districts, at least fairly close. That's one of the problems. We had so much money, and that looked the highest priority to me, so that's the direction I went.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you. Senator Foley, there's two programs that I'd like you to just maybe make some comments on. The language doesn't really explain them either. And that's the new problem-solving court and then also the virtual self-help center. If you could enlighten a little bit more on those.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, the problem-solving courts are those that were the drug courts, to the other mental health courts, and so forth. The self-help program deals with issues that when you go into Hennepin County, for example, and they have a variety of documents that can be used in action. They have people there that can answer questions. And as you probably well know, that in the court system, why we have a significant problem trying to make things so that common people can understand what they are, and this is just to help that out a little bit. And essentially, Senator Stump, is these are pro se or people that do not have an attorney.
Mr. Chairman, with the last number of years, there's been a huge increase in fees. Let's say if you get a speeding ticket or if you, you can get a $70 speeding ticket that might cost you, instead of $70, it probably costs you $140. Why, and then what I heard is that if you contest it and go into court for whatever reason, you may end up spending a whole day sitting there just trying to get to a point where you could explain what happened. Is there any way that the courts could be designed so that people know up front that the cost, the real cost of the ticket, so that they could actually judge whether a loss of a day's income from being from sitting there all day would be worth the effort of contesting the ticket? And it seems like, and I went and I sat in on one of the judges up in our district, invited me in, and it was amazing. Several things that came out. One was that I'd say 95% of the people that came before the court couldn't afford to pay the fine to begin with. They all had to make some arrangements with the county or the district. And the other one was that there's such a magnitude of repeat customers, and most of them were young.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, one of the problems is that this money doesn't come to the courts. It has a tendency to go into other things. The post board, for instance, provide police officers standards and training unit is a big chunk of that money. There is money that goes to the law libraries and each district. And that type of thing is where we are. We have created a monster. There's no question that the way it's structured, why that the amount of money that comes in on fees is higher than the actual fine part of it. So it's not a good situation. But we didn't get any money in order to buy down on that, so that's why we're stuck with that.
Is there, Mr. Chairman, and I, this isn't maybe the right arena or place, but is there any way that you could actually have justice online, like especially for what would be modest offenses, that you could actually go online and figure out kind of what options you'd have, and make it make it available on a larger scale and kind of take some of the burden out of the hands of or out of the court arena.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, there's no question that could be done. I suspect that what we're looking there would be some type of long-term study to develop a way to set those kinds of procedures up and get them up and running. It really isn't a money thing in the sense that you really need to develop policy surrounding what it is and then to come and seek the money. So I'm not sure whether I should be involved in the determining what the policy is or not. Yeah, but I certainly agree with your thoughts on that. I only tell you that we've created such a problem that in those days when I was working on the .08 alcohol legislation, had to get money in order to fund that. And so, of course, we ended up with huge surcharges and so forth. It was fairly easy to take from an individual. The only problem is, in many instances, those individuals aren't paying that. So the consequence of that means there probably isn't any insurance coverage, just all of that. And more importantly, they're just not likely to ever get a driver license or get insurance.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions for Senator Foley? Amendments?
Mr.
Discussion?
Chair.
Senator Betzold.
I've got the A9 amendment. I've got two handouts to go with it. Mr. Chair, while the amendment is and the handouts are being distributed, let me describe what it is. This would raise the salaries of the justices of the Supreme Court, the judges of the Court of Appeals, and the district court judges by 5%, effective July 1st of 2007 and in July 1st of 2008. It does not provide additional money to do that. That's going to have to come out of the court's budget. There's also some rider language to provide because it doesn't quite cover the Court of Appeals, where the money would come be transferred from the Supreme Court budget and from the district court's budget in order to take care of the Court of Appeals. The reason why I think this amendment is necessary is, frankly, because judges' pay has not been keeping up with inflation. It's not been keeping up with anything, and, in fact, We've reached a situation today where not only some of the judges' pays, I think, are like 26th or 28th in the country, but we now have a situation in Minnesota, as you can see from an article that was in, the Minnesota Lawyer, where you've got now first-year law students, first-year graduates from law school now working at law firms, brand-new lawyers making about as much as judges, you know, who've been practicing lawyers and then, you know, judges for 30 years of experience. You've got some situations in Minnesota where assistant county attorneys and sheriffs are making more than the judges that they appear before. And I think it's something that we have to be concerned about. It is getting to the point where good, experienced judges are not staying on the bench. They're leaving because they – you know, they can make more money elsewhere because, you know, they've got kids going to college. It is actually getting harder and harder to find good qualified people to apply for some judgeships. The numbers have fallen off is what I've been advised. So I think we have to do something to keep up with the judicial branch. I believe there are people here who can testify on that. If the committee desires additional information, but this is what the A9 amendment does.
Okay. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would oppose this amendment. I think that while the judge salaries may not be reflective of what the national picture might be, it also is a situation where I doubt that many of those judges would be willing to work the hours that an associate does for some of these law firms. My last recollection, and some of the classmates of mine ended up with 90 hours a week to do that, and that what we're looking at here with the funding that I proposed was the same level that went to all state workers that I can see, and I would ask that you continue to maintain the funding at the same level.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Betzel.
I think judges do work very long hours, and we've just heard some discussion a few minutes ago about how just trying to process all the caseloads, when you get a courtroom full of people, you've got, we've certainly heard in the budget division about, you know, judges coming with stacks and stacks every day. They can only spend a few minutes on any particular case. I think it's wrong to say that they don't spend a lot of time, because they certainly do, and you know, we certainly heard that in the budget division.
Ms. Nairn, you're hanging out ominously over the staff. Senator Foley, did you want to testify for a minute?
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sandy Nairn on behalf of the Minnesota District Judges Association. I do want to clarify one common misunderstanding that many legislators have. Senator Foley's bill gives the courts 3.25% to give pay raises for all union employees who work for the courts, but that, in fact, is not what they will receive. They will receive what the unions negotiate. And I think one of the handouts that Senator Betzel may have given out for you to look at shows that over the last 22 years, the court employees and all state employees receive across the boards and step increases that are significantly higher. They average anywhere from 4.75% to 7.25%. So even though Senator Foley's bill only gives 3.25% to the courts or the union employees, in fact, they will receive significantly more, and probably more than what is proposed here for the judges. The one other point I wanted to make to the good comments that Senator Betzel made, the Compensation Council that meets every 2 years and to recommend pay raises for legislators, for judges, and the executive branch is going to be making its report this afternoon. And the proposed report that is before them mirrors the amendment that Senator Betzel has offered here today. So it is in line with what we're expecting the Compensation Council to recommend later today. What are they going to recommend for legislators?
Senator Murphy did.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Nairn. So you say that the unions do pretty good when they go in to negotiate. Maybe the judges ought to just join the union.
Mr. Chair, Senator Murphy, I have been teased over the years that I am just another union rep for the judges. So I guess that they are elected officials, so I don't think they will come and join the unions. But it's probably a good suggestion.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have nurses as part of their bargaining group, so things change all the time.
Senator Murphy.
Senator Murphy, maybe that's a good suggestion.
Following that logic, Senator Murphy, what union should we join?
We need a union.
31,000.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make one up. How's that?
Okay, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Foley or Senator Betzel, I guess Section 12 of the bill, I probably missed the detailed explanation of this, but I thought that this was essentially doing similarly to what Senator Betzel is asking for. This requires that the judges' raises be in line with other employee raises. Is that correct?
Sure.
Senator Foley or Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, that's correct. It indexes judges' salaries to the average percentage increase negotiated by state employee unions starting in 2009.
Okay, and so, Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, yours would, what's the difference with what you're trying to do? You want to get beyond that
percent.
3.25%?
This raises it up 5%, as I say, to be right now they're behind. 5%. So this bumps them up by 5%.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I got to finish my coffee and then I'll be on the ball this morning.
Okay, we'll see in a while.
I didn't see the 5%, Mr. Okay. Chair. Yeah, I think, you know, I'm sympathetic, but I do think that, you know, when you look at the salaries of public defenders and legal aid lawyers, they are so, so, so far below those of judges. It's hard to be as sympathetic as maybe I should be to the need for increased pay. I think judges work extremely hard and deserve every penny that they get and more. But it's hard for me to think about taking the money from other parts of the court system at this point in time.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just, you know, I don't have a dog in this fight, but the one thing I will say is that Senator Anderson is former Senator Ten Eyck, you know, Judge Ten Eyck stopped by the other day, and he brought a folder that was you know, one of these size, completely full, like this. That was his court calendar for one day. He said that they would start at 9 a.m. and be done by about 10 p.m. So, you know, when folks talk about, and so that when I was looking at the map, I see the district that he's in is going to get two more judges. So instead of that folder being about that thick, it'd only be about that thick. But, you know, judges work really hard. You know, one part that I'm kind of worried about is if this is robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, that part I don't agree with either, because I know a lot of people at the Goodhue County Courthouse, and those folks all work unbelievably long hours, and it's a tedious job. And sometimes they're the first contact for people who are showing up to court for a moving violation or whatever. And unfortunately, those people who are the first contact seem to be the ones that take the brunt of people's dissatisfaction, especially when they have to wait around from 9 a.m. to about 5 p.m. before they get their court case heard. So I'm kind of conflicted here. The judges definitely need a pay raise, but we don't need to be taking it out of somebody else's hide.
Ms. Nairn.
Mr. Chair, in response to Senator Anderson's comments, the Chief Public Defender salary is tied to that of a district court judge, so I think they may be supporting having the pay as high as possible, unofficially.
Well, Mr. Chair and Ms.
Nairn, even the chiefs.
I'm glad to help the Chief Public Defender get a pay raise, but all the other ones are down in the, it's according to this article that was passed out, average $43,000, and for prosecutors $43,900, and for legal aid even less. And so, and in the metro area, just a little bit higher than that, but half or less what we're talking about for the judges and the chief. And so I guess I'd be concerned about, I mean, all three legs of the stool are critical to have a justice system that works. We know that. And so this is not, we're not pitting those against each other in this amendment, but I just think that those are a higher priority in terms of being able to get good lawyers into the system. I think there's a lot of people who still want to be judges in Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I have been told that applications for judgeships have fallen significantly in the last number of years, particularly from the private sector. And part of the reason I think that the Compensation Council is recommending slightly higher increases for the judges this time than they were in 2005 is the legislature only gave 1.5% raises to the judges for the last 2 years, while all the other employees in the system got anywhere from 4.5% to 6% raises. So I think that's part of the reason. It's a little bit of makeup, and then trying to, in the future, tie them to the unions. That rider language that does tie the judges to the unions in the future, I have tried for years to put that permanently in statute, and if we had had it in statute sooner, judges would be in a much better position now. But I've never been able to convince the House to go along with it. The Senate has passed it several times.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess just the last question then would be for Senator Foley. would there be what's your concern about the cost of this and what the impact would be on the rest of the court system? I guess
Senator Foley.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, I was given a target, and in that target it had structures for salaries, and I followed that faithfully, and if I have to rework that, why, it's going to have to come out of someone else's salaries or some other part of the budget, and so I oppose this bill.
Okay, I want to be a little bit careful just to make sure. Senator Betzold, as I understand your amendment from reading it, it would allow the salaries to be taken from the discretionary parts of the budget.
Yes.
Pursuant to the amendment we just passed. It would not allow the salaries to be taken from the other non-discretionary parts of the budget.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and it doesn't affect the bottom line at all.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Maybe somebody could just explain what the discretionary parts of the budget are.
Senator Stumpf, well, I'll tell you what, I'll have Mr. Turner respond.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf.
In district court.
The bill is very prescriptive. I think when people are talking about prescriptive or discretionary money, they're talking about the new money that the A7 amendment created when we upped the target by $8.5 million, and of that money, $1.4 million went to the Supreme Court under line 6 on the spreadsheet, and $4.5 million went to the trial courts on line 37 of the spreadsheet. So those are the only lines that are not prescriptive about how the money has to be used. And the total cost for judges, a 5 and 5 increase would cost about $7.8 million, and that would come out of a good portion of that would come out of the 3.25 line, and then the maintain court justice services line would pay for the rest, with one exception, and that's the appeals court. That's why we have transfer language in the amendment that they can take money from either of those two lines if the appeals court doesn't have enough money for a 5 and 5 raise.
Okay. We have Senator Betzold's motion in front of us.
Senator Murphy just stepped out. He asked to be brought back in for the vote. So.
Does he? Okay.
Yeah.
As a courtesy to Senator Murphy, we will wait for him. Further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, just so if I understood that correctly, where that money might come from could be the new judges.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, where that money would come from actually is other court employees. Because that money is not earmarked, and so if the, it's true that it won't come from a public defender or anybody else in this budget, but it will come from other trial court employees.
Well, don't they, Mr. Chairman, don't they need the other employees to keep the courts running?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, yes.
Mr. Mossman, can you? Let's see if we can.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to further articulate. I think that the language in the bill would still require the courts to fund the minimum 3.25% that's called for in the bill for all other state employees, similar to the language we have in all of the budget bills that have gone through. So there's still minimum funding language. And in addition to the flexibility that Mr. Turner has described, I believe the amendment that you adopted earlier also gave some authority to move money, if necessary, from expanded problem-solving courts and pro se litigants funding that was described earlier. So I think that that's an additional avenue of flexibility that's provided for in the bill that would allow for both the 5% and the minimum 3.25% to be funded.
Okay. We have Senator Betzel's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carries. Further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Senate File 1972 as amended be recommended pass.
Okay, we have Senator Betzel's motion that Senate File 1972 as amended be recommended pass. Is there further discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Foley and staff. Then Senator Langseth, if he is here. There he is.
Thank you.
Okay, members, I want to make this very clear before we start. Yes, Senator Langseth is coming to the table. If I could have your attention, please. Let's wait till. Okay, Senator Langseth is coming to the table on Senate File 2157. He's made it clear that there are to be no questions.
Yeah, no questions.
That's what you had.
Let's be expedient here.
Mr. Chairman, right. that doesn't mean we can't make amendments.
Can we merge them?
We just can't ask questions.
Yeah, just do it as a declarative sentence. Senator Langseth, Senate File 2157, the supplemental bonding bill.
Yeah, well, to just give you a little outline, as you probably know, we were allowed to go to $135 million in bonding this year. That stays within the 3%. Those there was really only five projects in there, the university request, the Minsky request, the Central Corridor, the bridge bonding, and then part of the Union Depot. And then we have just under $137 million in one-time money as well. So I'll just
and Senator Langseth.
Yeah.
Courtesy of this committee.
Yes, I am forever beholden to the chairman of this committee.
No, the entire committee.
And all the members.
No,
Mr.
Not
Chair,
the chairman. The entire
chairs.
Committee.
Okay, the entire committee. Mm-hmm. Well, I think there was some people on the committee that kind of wanted more for themselves and less for me, but I appreciate it anyway.
I found a rumor.
The committee,
you
committee,
got you the spreadsheets?
We've got a spreadsheet and the bill.
Okay. I guess I don't even have the bill.
You've got the bill. Services
okay. So I'm just starting at the University of Minnesota. The HEPR, or the Asset Preservation, is $22 million, and the Biomedical Science Research Facility is $14.4 million. What they asked was that we go 90% of the cost from the state, and we went 80%, so it's a little bit less than they asked for. Under Minsky, the HEPR is $30 million. Then there's land acquisition up at Bemidji State University, $2 million. And at the Fond du Lac College, $1.8 million. And then under education, there's one place I had to give a lot, hopefully temporary, and that's Red Lake High School. The request was for $30 million. And to try to get down to my level, I'd put $5 million. The house... I guess we're not supposed to talk about the other body, but they do have the full amount. And at some point, I would like the chairman and members of this committee to be a little more generous and allow me the $30 million for that project. Under natural resources, Cuyuna County State Recreation Trail, $125,000. That had a fair amount of federal money. And Upper Bluffs Repair, that's out at Fort Snelling. There's some matching money for $500,000, and so we came up with $500,000. Gateway Trail is $650,000. That's the tunnel thing.
Yes.
Yeah, there was a timing factor there. That particular intersection there is going to be closed off for the next 6 months for repairs, and they felt it was... They wanted to do that tunnel underneath there at the same time. Probably it'll save money, but also save a lot of congestion if it's done all at the same time. Greenleaf Park, land purchase, $700,000. Lake Zumbro restoration, $350,000. This is between Red Wing and Rochester. And it's silted in very, very badly. And this is basically planning money for it. And the Red River Basin digital mapping, that's
airplane flies over to a certain height and takes thousands of photographs, and they can get the elevation of the land within 6 inches, and this is very necessary for planning for flooding in the Red River Basin. The watershed is coming up with a fair amount of money. They've asked North Dakota and South Dakota, North Dakota and Minnesota for $600,000 apiece, and North Dakota, I guess, has already come with theirs. And then there'll be some federal money. And once this is completed, they say they can put this into a computer, and at whatever crest the Red River is, they can tell just exactly how much water there is on basically any place in the Red River Basin, and it'd be very very good for information as they predict floods and so on. We've had this before the committees a couple more times, but of course we didn't have any one-time money at that time or general fund money, and this requires general fund money. And then the Stillwater Flood Control, that there's quite a bit of federal money that has now been allocated, and this is needed just to match that. Under pollution control, Albert Lee remedial system, there's a landfill that unfortunately was put right next to a lake. In the last bonding bill, we thought we had appropriated enough money to remove that landfill and put it into a landfill a ways away. Turns out we're $2.5 million short. Initially, I thought that could wait till next year, but I guess it's leaching into the lake right now. So, the timing is such that that we really need that at this point. Water and Soil Resources Board. There's a watershed, Gaylord Watershed, $150,000. Then the Rim Reserve Conservation, $10 million. I guess the federal's actually got $15 million, maybe even more than that. The governor recommended 10, so we went with $10 million, but that will be matched by the federal government. And then at the Minnesota Zoo, there's, I don't know, maybe you can explain it better than I can.
I'm not sure I can explain it either, but there's some problems with their water system, and it's causing problems for the city of Eagan. So the governor and the House have included this in their request, too.
I think there was even some kind of a mandate that they had to fix it. But it was fairly crucial as far as the timing is concerned. Now, this year we did put the trunk highway bond provisions in there because they've been falling through the cracks for so long. That DOT building exterior, those panels are falling down and very dangerous. Then let's see, property acquisition for the administration. I believe, you know, years ago when we authorized these buildings over here, the Senate had plenty of money for parking. In the House, they just didn't think we need that much for parking. Now, they're way short of parking, so I guess they're buying it's a church property, and they want to put a parking ramp up there so that these people that work at these buildings will have enough parking. And under public safety, Anoka County Forensic Crime Lab, there's a couple of counties, two or three counties that are going together on a regional jail, and they are waiting like 6 months for their DNA reports and so on from out of the BCA, and they just don't feel they can wait that long, and they're going to be tied in with St. Cloud and so on, and hopefully speed things up, because they say they, when it comes to sentencing people and everything, it's just, or the court cases, it's just taking way, way too long. Then the Browns Valley flood mitigation, you've all heard about that in the news. It's, I put in $2 million with fairly loose language. There's also some language that puts Browns Valley into, so they're recipients of the flood control money that we passed the last two bonding years. The 1 year it was $27 million, 1 year was $25, and there's a few million left. And so that would allow the Department of Natural Resources to allocate some money for the public damage. But this would be much more loosely written and hopefully be able to help some of those people out that got flooded. in that particular area, town that flooded, they had never flooded in the previous floods, but there was this ice jam that caused that one part of town to flood. So most of the people didn't have flood insurance because they've gone through floods and never got hurt. And one of the problems is the federal government, unless it's $5 million or more damage, they won't come in and help. The idea is that if it's less than $5 million, the states themselves can do it. So this, I think by the time we get out of conference committee, we'll have a better handle on just what is needed here and just how things should be written. But we do have to be a little careful that we don't start giving people without insurance as much as they would have if they had insurance, because then obviously the message is forget about having flood insurance because your state will bail you out. But we would like to be able to help them. There's, I guess, between 15 and 17, they think they're going to just buy out, so we need some money for that. Normally FEMA would do that under the federal, and because FEMA isn't coming into this one, we would be doing that. Then these three training centers were all in last year's bill. We did fund Scott County one somewhat last time, but it does put these three in. under transportation, that high-speed rail, St. Paul to Chicago, get $2 million. Local bridges are $30 million. There's about $100 million worth that's ready to go. One reason we always put bridge money in the off year is because every county in the state gets something out of this. It really spreads the money around. And I think that's true of asset preservation for Minsky and the U as well, that every part of the state gets something there and does kind of and it's needed. There's a big need there, and also it does kind of get all parts of the state involved. And then the Mankato District Headquarters, that's the trunk highway bonds, and that's at District Headquarters. it's the last one in the state that hasn't been done of those districts. The plan was that they were going to move on to a new site, and the city was going to buy the old building and renovate it. It's been sitting there for years and years and years, and it always falls through the cracks. The city has put like $1.5 million into the new site for DOT. And this year, it's in Senator Murphy's bill, but I thought I'd put it in this one and make sure this time that it, the one way or another, it gets done. We got port assistance for $500,000, and that, I guess, would be enough for that project down in the Red Wing area. Under Metropolitan Council, the Central Corridor, we gave them their request at $40 million. And there's Arch Bridge in South St. Paul for a trail is $600,000. Then there were requests for all these different transit ways, and what we did is threw them all together and then come up with $250,000 for a study of those different transit ways. St. Paul Depot, that's another $2.8 million, and well, just below that it's the bond part for $1.2 million, so it's a total of $4 million. The Springbrook Nature Center in the northern suburbs, that we had that last time, and it was one I definitely intended to get, and it in the governor's office there's a few things fell through the cracks, and that was one of them, so we did put that in again this year. This West Central Chemical Treatment Facility. There's many of the counties in northwestern Minnesota first had come to me about helping them with a regional jail with a drug treatment component, and I said we've always turned down regional jails before, and they wanted some help with the drug part, and I said, well, I'll give you some planning money, and you could come back next year with whatever your plan is. But I guess it's about 80% of the people in jails have a drug problem, and these counties by themselves aren't able to handle this. So I think there's a dozen of them up there, so want to go together and have this drug treatment along with a regional jail, which they will pay for. Under corrections, this is also in the governor's recommendations. Oak Park Heights, some fairly crucial things that need to be done there for those
two particular items. Under economic development, Bayport Sewer is $150,000. We've been doing some of that before. That Bioscience Corridor, Rice Street, that's involves the St. Jude business, that biotech business, and there's a bridge over there that is really in need of being replaced, and they've got facilities on both sides of Highway 36. So this would come up with the, I guess, planning and pre-engineering or something like that. And Duluth Entertainment Center, we went with $37 million, which is just a hair below what they asked, I think with $37,900 or something. That Itasca County Infrastructure, $30 million, that's infrastructure for that steel mill that they think they stand a good chance of landing up there. Rochester Civic Center, Rochester's been giving up like over 70 conventions a year because they don't have as large a convention center as they need. And those conventions, in most cases, are medical conventions. People come from all over the world to those conventions. They have many of those conventions, but if they're more than a certain size, they just aren't able to accommodate that. And then St. Cloud renovation of that kind of hockey and event center, $11 million. Well, the Lewis and Clark, we bonding didn't work for that. As you know, that comes from the state of South Dakota, the water and so on, and it has to be general fund rather than bonding, so we're canceling the bonding and coming up with $5.2 million in general fund. So that is the bill.
Okay. Questions for Senator Langseth? Senator
Chairman, I just wanted to make one comment about the Mankato headquarters for MnDOT. Senator Langseth said that's been planned for a few years and has always fallen through the cracks. And Mankato isn't in my district, but I drive by both the site for the new MnDOT headquarters and also the old one, and I concur it's long past time that we have that project go forward because the city has spent, I don't know, is it $1 million or more on putting utilities in for the new building, and they've got arrangements to buy the old building from the from MnDOT and use it for city facilities. So I want to just add my voice to the fact that we need to see that happens this year.
And the price keeps going up every time we put in an amount, but the price keeps going up. So,
and Mr. Chairman, like that isn't in my district either. I just happen to spend a fair amount of time in Mankato. Yeah.
Okay. Sir Langseth, is there any
I have a question.
Sir Stump.
I probably should mention we've got some language on the flood control. I guess it was kind of questionable whether we needed to put Roseau in because they actually did have – were listed on some specific projects. But we just did write them in to make sure that they have access all to this money that's left on the those two bonding bills. And we got Browns Valley in there. Did we put in bills? Just those two. Okay.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I have, I had a couple of them, but one is on – I keep misplacing it, but the reference to the flood hazardous mitigation grants on the spreadsheet, can you point that out where those are?
Well, it's just Browns Valley that's pointed out there. The rest of it is just language putting these communities into the last two bonding bills we've had. I guess I'm not even sure which page they're on. Maybe Peter could help us there.
Well, I thought I saw one reference for flood hazardous mitigation grants that totaled $27 million, and then I thought I saw another reference
for $25 million.
For $25 million.
They're the last two bonding bills.
Oh, okay.
And see, that money is still available. Now, the biggest share of it has been allocated, but there's still some left, and
okay,
and we'll
so
get
what,
something for Browns Valley and something for Roseau out of that.
So that's why they don't appear on the
that's
tracking
correct. That's
sheet.
Correct.
The other, Mr. Chairman, the other question I have is on Section 24, which relates to the McPhail Music Center and the language in Clause C and D. Which is, I haven't seen that kind of language before, where
There is a problem there. We had them in last year for, what was it, $5 million? $5 million. Kathy, maybe you can explain the reason that the language is needed.
Mr. Chair, the McPhail Center has pledges for some ongoing years, and this language is necessary in order to use those pledges. The governor has agreed to this, and the House has it in as well.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Langseth, is it to try to secure the match?
That's correct. It's, there's $5 million, and they would be able to receive that match then.
Okay.
Senator Stumpf reads the bills. That makes it very difficult.
Well, he missed the problem when I said there were to be no questions. So,
well, one question is okay.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, then Senator Langseth on 26, what does Section D mean? Why did McPhail need that? Kind of confusing.
Is there anybody here with McPhail?
I don't see anybody, Senator Langseth.
For the city of Minneapolis?
Is this some deal we need for two harbors for some money we had? Peter, do you remember what the reasoning behind that one?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, if I could explain. Since this project with McPhail is a combination of public and private money, with there being far more private money than public money, and the state having a right to, or the city of Minneapolis having a right to terminate the lease of the property with McPhail after a certain number of years, 20 years or so, the McPhail people were concerned that they would be putting all this money into a facility that after 20 or so years after their first lease had expired, they would be out the property and out all their money. So they wanted some assurance that if the lease were terminated, the city of Minneapolis would have to buy them out. They could get their money back. But there are apparently some requirements that ordinarily there would be an escrow of money set aside by the city of Minneapolis in order to do that. This language says no, there need not be an escrow, but that if there is a termination of the lease, the city of Minneapolis would have to buy out the interest of McPhail in the property.
Further questions on that section? Okay. Further questions from the committee? Senator Langseth, there are a couple of, I think, small amendments. We could take those because at least one of the authors is here. I thought we might have a couple of minutes of discussion. We have Vice President Sarah here, who possibly could speak to the biomedical facilities portion of the bill.
Well, that we haven't really even gotten into
you
that.
Haven't explained.
I wasn't quite sure what
language.
You wanted. It sounded like you were done talking about the bill, so I wasn't sure.
Okay,
if you
wanted,
did when you want to go through the language in the bill then?
The A7 amendment, do you have that? It was handed to me by Senator Bach.
Yes.
Maybe
Senator Bach,
Senator
you explain
Bach
the amendment?
Explain that.
Yeah, if we could have it distributed.
Thank you.
Senator Bach, if you could indicate what your request of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, a number of years ago, this legislature committed to bonding for one of the harbors on Lake Superior at the City of Two Harbors. And for years, the City of Two Harbors was in negotiations for the purchase of the land that was owned by the railroad in town. And it took a number of years. We actually have extended the bonding authority a couple of times because the project just hasn't had the land available. And what most recently happened was the Army Corps had committed $3.5 million, and we had bonding to match that for the basin. And what happened when Katrina hit, the Army Corps went looking around where they could find money and decided, well, as long as this project isn't ready to go, we'll pull the Army Corps money and put it into the Katrina project. So we lost the Army Corps match, and current law says that we have to have $4 million of Army Corps money before we can access the state money. And now Congressman Oberstar is working on getting that Army Corps appropriation back, and I'm sure he'll be successful at that. But what this language allows us to do is match some money that the Army Corps has spent. The Army Corps has spent $625,000 on developing the environmental permitting and the engineering work on the safe harbor at Two Harbors. What this would allow is it would allow the DNR to access $625,000 of the money the state has appropriated to move forward with the design of it, but the rest of the money would not be able to be matched until we have the rest of the money, the $4 million from the Army Corps, available. So it doesn't appropriate any new money, just allows them to access some existing money that the Army Corps has already matched.
Okay. Sir Langseth.
Yeah, in favor of the amendment.
And, Mr. Chairman, I should say the DNR's position is neutral. It's not in the governor's budget, so they're not interested in commenting on it.
All right. Is there a discussion of the A7 amendment? Does anybody wish to move the amendment? Senator Frederickson moves adoption of the A7 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Langseth.
No, do we have any amendments? I don't believe we have any amendments. Sure. I know there have been some talk, but in some cases it's in the House bill too. So I don't know if anybody else has got amendments or not.
Senator Metzen.
I've got an amendment that was brought to me this morning, and I believe do you have that? It deals with the University of Minnesota Fairview relationship. Talks about that the funds can't be used for the building of a hospital. I guess I believe they've talked to Senator Langseth about this and Chairman Cohen.
The biomedical funds?
And maybe Mr. Cassidy could give us about a 1.5-minute explanation of.
Sure, Mr. Cassidy.
I understood. It's okay with the university, but I think we better get a comment.
Yeah, Mr. Cassidy.
Paul.
Sarah Metzen is presenting the proposed amendment and asked if you might comment on it.
Senator. Mr. Chairman, Senators, this is a clarifying amendment, basically, that comes from my client, Children's Hospitals and Clinics. There's a concern, a little bit of a concern.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Excuse me, Paul Cassidy with Leonard Street and Diner on behalf of Children's Hospitals and Clinics. This is basically just a clarifying amendment. For my client, Children's Hospitals and Clinics, supported, I think, by the U and as well as the author of the bill, clarifying amendment that goes to the issue of the University of Minnesota and Fairview relationship. Obviously, hospitals compete with one another. We want to make sure that none of the funds that are in the biosciences provision of this bill go to contributing to the building of a new hospital. That's about as simple as it is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess the university is nodding in the affirmative. So I'll go
through. Senator Metzen moves adoption of the A5 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. This might give an opportunity. Senator Langseth, maybe we could have Dr. Serra just address us for a minute.
Are we through with
well, I don't know. You've been. I asked you if there's anything else you want to present in terms of the bill.
I don't have anything else.
Okay. Maybe we could ask Dr. Serra to just address Article 2 for a minute. And members, this is a significant piece of the bill. It's the provision for the biomedical facilities for the university. It's legislation of which I'm the chief author, but Senator Langseth and Senator Pappas have been heavily involved with this over these last couple of years. And members will recall that we actually passed this bill off the floor of the Senate, and we were debating yesterday if it was a vote of 55 to 12 or 53 to 12 or something like that. And I think everybody, looking around the table, I think everybody has served on finance before, maybe with the exception of Senator Betzold. So you've heard discussion of the bill, but it's we're presenting it this year with the bonding bill. And again, it's Article 2. But Dr. Cerro, maybe you could just indicate why we should do this.
Senator Cohn, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to make some brief comments about this part of the bill for the Biomedical Facilities Authority. Mm-hmm. I think the appropriate context for the creation of this authority is the future of the biosciences in the state of Minnesota. Right now, clearly we are the world leader in medical devices, and we have two other great parts of biosciences in our agricultural industry and in industrial applications such as biofuels and biomass. We are being severely challenged, and the risk that we have is that the East Coast and the West Coast will outpace us and we will become a flyover state for the biosciences. The key to the future of the biosciences is the University of Minnesota that has the breadth and the depth to create the new knowledge in health, industrial, and ag applications of bioscience that really drives the private sector creation and the new industry and new companies for the state of Minnesota. Now, we don't do that all alone, but most of the innovation in the state is in the University of Minnesota in this kind of breadth. We also partner with other institutions, such as the Mayo Clinic, in the very successful University of Minnesota Mayo Partnership in health biosciences. We also partner with the Minsky system because to create these new companies, we also need the workforce that supports them, particularly on a regional basis. Success in the future in the biosciences really requires this investment in facilities and faculty at the university. Now, a few words about recruiting and retaining faculty. We are in a time in this country where the national competition for the faculty who can create this kind of innovation is as severe as it's ever been in my 30-plus years in higher education. We compete with the Harvards, the Hopkins on the East Coast, the University of California system on the West Coast, particularly San Francisco, San Diego, and Los Angeles. We compete immediately to the west with Wisconsin and Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, who are all making enormous investments at this time. And we're still very well positioned, but we really need some help. And the part of the reason we need help in this national competition is we are at capacity in both faculty and facilities for this kind of research. So we continue to recruit faculty, but because it's the new faculty that gives us the capacity to do the research. In a competitive market, you need the right kind of facilities to put them in so they can do their work. Our problem right now is we are rapidly running out of facilities to recruit faculty into. So that's problem number one. Number two, if you're a faculty in this area, part of what's very important to you in your recruitment package is the kind of facilities that you move into. The third factor, I think, that goes into this is that we need to be able to plan our recruitments. Recruiting the kind of faculty we're talking about takes 3 to 4 years. It's a very long recruitment process, and it takes a long time to develop the relationship and have them come here instead of Wisconsin or Michigan or the East Coast or the West Coast. Our last recruit, Professor Georg, actually took 3.5 years, and she really used up the last big piece of space we have for the 20 people she brought with her. Now, the thing about these buildings is that they're spaced out in a way that we can recruit faculty in them, so the day their door opens, they're full. And each one of those buildings will have 40 new principal investigators, about another 140 research support people, and will generate $20 to $25 million in new research revenue. And out of that will come the innovation that's necessary to build new companies and to support the biosciences industry. Now, we've realized, as I think you have, we cannot do this in all areas of the biosciences. It's very necessary to focus, and the faculty have focused. I'll give you some examples of where we will be growing. There's a list of 8 of these. The 3 I'll talk about are cardiovascular disease and new ways of treating myocardial infarction. You saw an article in the paper today of a collaborative project we've done with the Heart Institute in Alina at Abbott Northwestern that shows great promise for the utilization of adult stem cells. We are already a world leader in magnetic resonance imaging research. Camille Ugerbill and his group is the world's leader in the development of magnetic resonance imaging research. We are beginning to be outpaced by Harvard and Hopkins. And we need that investment to expand that facility to create this new magnet that will keep us on the world forefront and is the magnet for attracting faculty. And I should tell you that over 800 or 900 faculty at the university do collaborative research in that facility. Our third area is neuroscience. These are areas like how do children learn, how do they grow in development, what's the basis of mental disease, the anatomical and physiologic basis, and how do we develop the cures for Alzheimer's and Parkinsonisms and the new treatment for strokes. So recruiting faculty really is a national competition. It takes time, and we need to plan for it. And these facilities will put us on the national map, will markedly improve our national competitive status, and allow us to fulfill this promise. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Dr. Sarah. So is the plan to build 6 total, and that we funded 1 last year and 1 is being funded this year, so there are 4 more?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, yes.
Okay.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Sarah, I really appreciate your testimony. Very, very interesting, and I really support the proposal. I just want to comment that I attempted to get some funding for an incubator, University Enterprise Laboratories, which works at the University of Minnesota, right next to the University of Minnesota campus between Minneapolis and St. Paul. And unfortunately, I think we lost funding for that in the shrinking of the budget targets. And it's very – so I just wanted to ask Dr. Sarah if you're aware of the need to have those kinds of incubators that works directly with the University of Minnesota to try to take some of these ideas that are developed in the university's labs and start the development of those businesses on the very micro level and then move them out into marketability.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, the short answer to your question is yes, but I don't find that a sufficient answer. I think the point you're making is a critical point. And University Enterprise Laboratory is an important piece of how the technology moves out of the university into these incubators or the next version called accelerators. And from there, the difference between incubator and accelerator has more to do that the accelerator takes 6 new companies and puts a business group together that really drives them along with the financing. It's kind of the next step up. And out of that hub, the technology then spreads to the regional economic zones of the state. And that's why it's critical that in those regional economic zones, the health care is where it should be, the business environments are where it should be, the Minsky schools are producing the kind of people that are going to be needed. And that's kind of the 15, 20-year vision. If Dale Wallstrom were here from the Biobusiness Alliance, he could give you a lot more detail on it. But that is the vision for this to happen, and UEL is an important piece of that.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I appreciate that, and I know Dean Eldy from the College of Biological Sciences came and testified for that, and I hope that we can figure out a way to put that into our big picture, because that is part of the promise of this biomedical development, as you said, is to really along with the workforce, along with the university, is to translate it into jobs and a big part of our economic success in the future. So I hope we can find a way to support that piece of the puzzle.
And maybe you and I could talk about that afterwards. Mm-hmm. Senator Pappas.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Langseth, on page 19, it mentions a $2 million for a bridge over Trunk Highway 36. But on the spreadsheet, on line 91, it's called a bioscience corridor.
Well, that's the St. Jude. St. Jude is on both sides, and of course, medical devices are there.
Oh.
They're a big thing.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what that was.
Are there other questions or comments relative to Dr. Serra's testimony? Well, thank you, and Senator Langseth, hopefully this will get the same kind of success it had on the Senate floor a year ago, and maybe get more success from the governor in the House than it had last year.
I think the governor is going to have to come forward on this one to help us with the House.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy and I actually have an amendment on page 13. Mine's the A4 amendment. And what's yours, Senator Murphy?
A3.
A3. They both have to do with the Union Depot Concourse. And so I think we want to do his amendment and part of mine.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, I think if we start with Senator Pappas' amendment and take everything but the last line of it and then do Senator Murphy's amendment.
Okay, so Senator Pappas, are you offering the A4 amendment?
The A4. Just, Mr. Watson, I thought maybe Senator Murphy's language, though, might be better to use on line 7 instead of my language.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, I'm talking about on the A4 amendment, line 1.5. Just don't do that.
Line 1.5. Yes, I understand. But I'm telling you on my amendment, line 1.2, mm-hmm. that I think Senator Murphy had, we should use Senator Murphy's language in the bill on page 13, line 7. He's got the more complete language about Union Depot.
Yes, it's just not in his amendment to do it at that point.
Not in his amendment, right. Okay, so here's my proposal, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, is that, first of all, let's take my language on my amendment A4 on line 1.3 and 1.4. I'd move that.
Okay, and do you want to explain the amendment?
Oh, yes. On the, I'm just specifying that the bonds for the Central Corridor can be used for preliminary engineering, preliminary design, final design and construction. This is a little broader use.
All right. We have Senator Pappas's amendment in front of us. Senator Langseth?
I favor the amendment.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries.
And
Senator Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the A3 amendment.
Okay. I think we've had that distributed.
And then, Mr. Chairman, I would want to put that language on the in the bill on line 7 as well. Senator Murphy's language.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Watson.
Mr. Chairman, that doesn't quite work, but we can get there.
Okay.
If we can first adopt Senator Murphy's
okay.
amendment.
All right.
Okay. Senator Murphy, do you want to speak to your amendment?
Mr. You're Chairman right. and Senator Langseth, this amendment matches up with what we've been doing in transportation, trying to get the Union Depot project going. We want it to be the hub here in the metropolitan area, and that's why we put it at the concourse level. One thing that we found out by taking testimony through Senator Dibble's subcommittee and a lot of the trade journals around transit is if people have a hub to work out of so that they can change trains to get on the bus or go from the bus to get on a light rail or, you know, say they're taking the commuter rail up from Hastings and then getting on the Central Corridor. If they've got a place where they can do that in comfort and ease instead of out of a bus shelter or outside on the tracks, that the ridership goes up. That's why you've seen all these federally funded transit projects, why you've seen their ridership increase threefold above expectation is because they've been built and designed right correctly, and we just want to make sure that happens here.
Okay, we have Senator Murphy's amendment in front of us. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Watson.
Then, Mr. Chairman, to make Senator Murphy's language fit under the high-speed rail line, take a look at line 13.7, where it's talking about this line is going to run between St. Paul and Chicago. And on line 7, delete St. Paul, and then take the language from Senator Murphy's amendment on lines 1.3 and 4 that would say, so it's a line between the Union Depot Concourse Multimodal Transit Hub located in downtown St. Paul
in the area
south of Kellogg Boulevard and east of Jackson Street.
I would move that.
Senator
Mr.
Pappas
Chairman.
Moves that language. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion or amendment, Senator Betzold.
Mr. Chair, I've got a very technical one. It's not written, but it's just called to my attention. Page 29, there's some language on lines 14 to 16 regarding a requirement on North Star, and it's my understanding that Burlington Northern actually needs one phrase in here, and I think Mr. Watson has indicated that after the word project, if we insert the words or pre-hyphen award authority, that is actually what they need in order to proceed with the full funding grant agreement execution. Again, on line 15, after the word project or pre-hyphen award authority. Pre-award authority.
All right, we have Senator Betzold's motion in front of us. Is there further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to commend Senator Langseth on the good job he did here with limited resources, but I am disappointed that there isn't anything in here for the capital renovation. And I know that we got all excited and we took the tours and the bowels of the Capitol, and we see all the HVAC problems that we have, and we know we have a space issue. So I just wanted to ask Senator Langseth to comment on that.
Senator Langseth.
Well, I favored it as well, and I figured this time with our one-time money, obviously it got squeezed very badly, but I thought we should be doing the first
That's
phase.
That's an understatement.
Okay. I thought we should do it with cash money now, the $130 million in the first phase, and then we could work out the rest in the future bonding bills. But now if we got to take what will be a total probably $260 million out of the bonding bills, it's really going to put a squeeze on it. One thing people don't quite understand is these bonding bills are actually getting much, much smaller because of what you can buy with them. They're anticipating a 13% increase in building costs just in 1 year. The House was not interested at all. They thought this was a Senate project, I guess. And so far, the governor has not indicated any support. So I sort of gave up on it.
Mr. Chairman, it's a shame. I mean, this is the People's Building. It's a prime historic building, and we have not been taking care of it. And it needs this major renovation. Even if we didn't do you know, a new auditorium or a new office space, we certainly should do the HVAC work that needs to be done, and that's the unglamorous stuff. But it is really important, and that stuff right now is just patched together. There's a lot of places in the Capitol where it's very unsafe, and we're not utilizing space very well. So I just think it's a shame that we don't have more leadership from the governor on this issue.
Or the House.
Senator Frederickson. If there's no further discussion or amendments.
Chairman, I'd move the Senate file number 2157 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
On the Frederickson motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. And meeting is adjourned.